This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now, Shannon Dreher from spring training. And so, Shannon, it's been kind of a quiet week. Obviously, I've been tied up here at the Combine. So kind of update us. I mean, I guess quiet week is pretty good considering how many injuries happened in week one. What good things have happened to the Mariners from what you've seen this week?
Well, I think one of the best things we saw was we saw Marco Gonzalez make a second strong start in the changes that he has made, and also, you know, the additions of the cutter that he has added since coming off that first full year back from the Tommy John surgery, and just kind of the confidence he has right now. Very interesting to watch, and it'll be interesting to see where that goes. I think some of the relievers have looked particularly good. Dan Altavilla, who had some serious command issues last year, has not shown that at all this year. Again, he's changed up his delivery a little bit to give himself kind of less room for error, keeping everything going towards the plate, and that's really paid off for him in his three outings. You know he's got good stuff. It's just a matter, can he place it? And so far, he's done that in his three outings. Edwin Diaz has looked good. Juan Nicasio has looked good. Felix Hernandez, we had the biggest of scares with him, but the good news was it was nothing more than a bruise, and there's a good chance that he only misses one start, which does not put him that far off the schedule that the Mariners wanted him to be on. And then you're also seeing the other thing that I would really keep an eye on is Kyle Seager, who is a notoriously slow starter in the season, is 7 for his first 11 and using the entire field. And Scott Servais had some really interesting comments about that. And, you know, with Kyle, he's been a guy that has been very prone to pull, 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 and thus he sees quite a bit of the shift. If he's able to have success using the whole field, it's going to be tough to shift against him. And Scott said if that happens, he could have a very, very special season. So all very early with all of this, but those are definite positives.
Yeah, what has Kyle done? Has he done any kind of changes in his preparation, his swing? What is he doing differently?
It looks more like approach, and it's a little bit easier to do right now in games early on. But we'll see. It's, you know, he's a guy that you know, he's had kind of a different plan each year that he set out before the season. But he's not somebody that really has to do. I mean, his swing is something. He's a tinkerer. It's constantly something that he is working to improve using the video, using kind of everything that they have available to do along those lines. But, you know, regardless of what it is, for him, I think it comes down to approach at this time. And there are some that will say that, you know what, you've just got to go out there and be yourself. You can't really change who you are as a hitter. But right now what he's doing looks a little bit different, looks like he is committed to using more of the field, you know, which perhaps will take away a little bit of his power, a little bit of his home runs, could, you know, tack on the doubles. And when you look at the lineup around him, you don't need Kyle Seager hitting 30 home runs. It's good if he could hit, you know, 40 doubles. It's good if he could get on base a little bit more, drive in a few more, and kind of trade some of those outs that he might be getting to the shift when he is trying to pull, rather than, you know, just kind of settling for the single or settling for the double at that point.
Well, I mean, I know you brought this up last year, is that, I mean, you know, he's one of the smartest hitters that you've encountered. I mean, early in his career, he got it. He understood it. And I know that applied to one other guy in the team last year. But, you know, maybe, you know, he's kind of not reinventing himself, but like anything else, you make adjustments as you get a little bit older.
You do, and I think he's kind of being more of what he's supposed to be. I think that perhaps he did, you know, perhaps kind of try and concentrate on the power a little bit too much. And again, not changing the swing, just the approach with him. But when you look at the tools that he has, and as he is a smart hitter, there's a lot more in the middle of the field for him than there is to the right side. So I think, you know, I haven't talked to him about that. It's only been, you know, 11 plate appearances. So you kind of wonder, it kind of jumps out at you. Okay, well, he's having some success. Then it's kind of pointed out where those hits are. Now it'll be interesting to see if he continues with that going forward and then kind of have the conversation with him about that. But as I said, he is constantly tinkering. It's constantly evolving. I think he knows himself as a hitter. I think he sometimes gets out of that a little bit. And I think it's being emphasized to him even more right now, that, and I think that it's being reinforced with the success that he's having early, And if he could get them to stop shifting, if he could get the opponent to kind of take that away, then I think, you know, then the benefits would be that much more. It's not an easy thing to do. If it were an easy thing to do, you wouldn't see a shift anymore. But it would appear that he's somebody that's got a shot to perhaps do that, use more of the field, be more of a complete hit. And if he does, I would agree with Scott Servais. He could have a special year.
Yeah, no doubt. Is there any young player or new player that's showing enough that they're there to maybe challenge for a roster spot in the 25?
I don't know that there's a roster spot to be challenged for right now. So, you know, that's what I kind of asked myself that in the bullpen in particular the other day. But, no, you don't see that. And you've kind of got some vets that are going to be kind of fighting for those bullpen spots anyway. And I don't see any surprises coming. You know, Erasmo Ramirez possibly could not start the season, but I don't see anybody challenging Ariel Miranda Andrew Moore for that right now, unless Max Posey. I don't know. But I guess there's a possibility we could see something from him late in spring training, but he hasn't even been scheduled for a start as of yet. So you don't see that. And, you know, that's kind of where things are missing a little bit. That's kind of where they, you know, when you look at the farm system rankings and they're not very high, a lot of it is because of that. And the two players actually that had a possibility to do that have been hurt early in camp. And one's going to be out for a while, and they're relievers. They're relievers who, they're young, but they both had very, very good Arizona Fall League seasons, Matt Festa and Art Warren. And this is kind of the thing, and we've seen it ever since Jerry Dipoto has been here. You don't think much of those guys that are relievers that are, you know, not setupmen or not closers, but all of a sudden, here comes Edwin Diaz. Look at the impact he had. Here comes Dan Altavilla. Look at the impact that he had, and, you know, a couple of other relievers that have since been traded. They put a lot of value on those players. They move them quickly, and those were two that I would anticipate would have been moved quickly, would have probably been able to challenge for a spot in spring training. But Festa looks like he is going. They're both dealing with hip issues of different severities. I think Warren's been cleared to throw, so we should see him in a game this week. I think he actually was supposed to throw a bullpen yesterday. Festa is further off. So you don't really have those players, and where you could really use them right now is the outfield. You know, we've got a question mark. We'll find out a little bit more about Ben Gamel, who was a late scratch from the game yesterday with what they said he tweaked his back in the batting cages. We don't know the severity. They're hoping it's just 3 or 4 days, but we'll see. Guillermo Heredia is coming off surgery, and they've had to sit on him. He is so far ahead of schedule that they've just been giving him extra days just because. He actually got into the game yesterday. They were going to wait until after he saw the team doctor on Monday, but he's fine. He can hit right now. They just don't want him fielding because of the way he plays. He's kind of, he could run into a wall or dive and hurt his shoulder again, but that's kind of where you would want it. It's further down. You like what you see from Ian Miller. You like what you see from Braden Bishop, but that guy that can challenge right now, you just don't see it.
Yeah. Now, as far as, you know, most of the bats, do they seem to be pretty much right on schedule right now? Nobody's kind of out of sync?
Mike Zunino got his first hit yesterday, and he's been out of sync. But, you know, with everything, his first priority in spring training is get the pitchers, and he did that. And then, you know, his swing is one where you got to get the timing. It's got to kick in, and it wasn't happening in the first few games, so they gave him an extra game to just DH yesterday, and sure enough, he had his first hit. He also had a ball that was well hit to center. So, you know, hopefully he's up and running at this point. But, no, it does seem like everybody is kind of where they should be with the bat.
That's encouraging because that's a good sign. Edwin Diaz, I guess his confidence continues to be at a very strong level.
It does, and I think it's a great thing. You know, a year ago this time he was packing up to go to the WBC. He didn't have much time in camp, and I think that's very valuable work time for him because he's still learning, and that's something that he learned last year. It was funny to watch him in spring training. He had a lot of confidence, and some of it almost seemed false. This was a guy, you know, they didn't have a full season of closing under his belt yet he was kind of one of the louder ones in the clubhouse and out of the field, and, you know, taken off for the WBC where he was going to be the hero for the Puerto Rico team a couple of times. But, you know, then he got into the season and there were some rough patches. And I think all that experience kind of added up and he's taken it all in and a little bit quieter, a little bit calmer this year, but you definitely see that confidence. And I like the fact that now he can get 5 weeks down here of work something that I think really kind of hurt him not getting last year.
Yeah. What things are you going to be looking for this weekend from the Mariners?
Well, tonight they have their first night game, so that's going to be a little bit different. Their schedule gets very strange this week where they have the night game today, day game tomorrow, off day Monday, and then three night games in a row. So this is kind of toward the end of the week where you want to see a little bit more consistency with the hitters. You were about a week away from, if there was a reliever that wasn't looking good, I'd be a little bit worried. I'd like to see Nick Vincent getting into a game. We haven't seen that yet. He's been slowed with some soreness. We hopefully see that this week. You know, not in games, but I'm really interested to hear on the off day, the team doctor's coming in. He's going to see a number of players. You know, what is the situation with Erasmo Ramirez? Did he just need to be shut down for the 2 weeks? Did they catch the lat strain before it was serious? Is he going to be able to go, if not in that first week, in the first 2 weeks of the season? And if not, then what are you doing about your number five? At that point, you know, Ariel Miranda's performances get very important. Andrew Moore's performances get very important. And perhaps, you know, that's maybe where somebody can be a surprise too. So I think that, you know, in the night games in particular, I think you're going to see more of the regulars in the middle of the week, and hopefully you see a return or two.
That'll be encouraging because, again, obviously the key is trying to get this team healthier after the slow start with the fast start with injuries. And, again, that's, I think, probably the good news this week where the news has been quiet because there's not mounting any new injuries.
Yeah, and now it's just waiting to make sure that it's nothing more than, you know, the kind of the minor injuries that they think that they've been dealing with because there are some key players, you know. Erasmo is a key player. Felix, I don't anticipate he was scheduled to start today. Of course, he's not with the arm bruise. Can he make his next start? I don't anticipate him not. He looks okay right now in the clubhouse. He hasn't had much on the elbow. The first day when I saw it was barely swollen. There was some swelling, but it wasn't anything terrible. Now, big league trainers are good at getting inflammation out and getting guys back along those lines. So, you know, that's going to be something important to watch for. And also the Gamble situation. I don't believe he's had back issues before, so hopefully that is just a couple of days too. So, you know, you cross your fingers. There's been a lot of things. And Mitch Haniger, too. We haven't seen him in a game yet because he's been dealing with a sore hand. He was cleared to start hitting with two hands yesterday and will be seen by the doctor on Monday. So you want to see him, I would hope, in games midweek, too. That's something to watch for.
Shannon, great update as always. Enjoy the game tonight.
Will do, John. You enjoy. Are you still at the combine?
Still at the combine. I was actually pleased because I was worried. I'm flying back tonight, and what I was worried about is my connecting flight in Chicago is coming from Boston. Well, I just looked at it, and it looks like it just took off and is supposed to arrive in Chicago 4 minutes early, so it looks like I will be able to get home tonight.
So you beat the nor'easter.
I beat the nor'easter, yeah, because I was worried when I was checking this morning and flights were being canceled like crazy, and the reason was that they weren't getting the flights that were supposed to land last night on ground, but when I called up this morning, they said they were going to be able to at least catch up, and it looks like they have been able to catch up, so at least I've been able to blow past the nor'easter, and it looks like I will be safe and coming home tonight.
Sounds good, John. Well, enjoy your last
My wife I is going to appreciate
there,
that.
Travel
so.
Safe.
Okay. Shannon, enjoy the game tonight. And, of course, thanks for the update. And, of course, give us a call here at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet in Seattle. Jet, how are you?
Dr. John, how you doing today?
Doing good. Had a good tour here in Indianapolis, packing the things up right now, and then ready to head to the airport after the show, try to catch a flight, which looks very encouraging, and all should be good.
How have the Underwear Olympics been treating you this week?
You mean the Pretty well. I mean, I know Graz isn't a big fan of it, but I am. I think that that's why it's so much fun. Because again, it's not just the draft, it's not just the running, it's not just the throwing. But again, you got free agency going on, you got news going on. I mean, you have just about an all-purpose type of shop here when you come, and that's what I really like about it. Because you know, it's all good thing. It's all football.
Right. And that's the first question I wanted to ask you. What's the scuttlebutt of the Jets? Is there any rumors about the Jets signing some of their own guys, like DeMario Davis or Claiborne, or bringing Seferian Jenkins back? Any movement on it? Any of those guys?
It looks like the Jenkins one still might be tough. I mean, I guess he's already turned down an $8 million offer from the Jets, but that's, you know, right in line which where a starting tight end is going to get. So I think they still have a chance to get him back, but he might test the market. The interesting one is Kirk Cousins, because it's like down to four teams, and the four teams are going to be, you know, the Jets, Minnesota Vikings, Arizona, and the Denver Broncos. And so the thought is the Jets are willing to go to $30 million, according to sources. And you figure that the Vikings are going to come in less. And so I think right now what's emerged, you know, Denver's going to be in the mix, and it's going to be hard for Arizona to fit him into the cap. But the way I'm kind of reading it right now is that I think there's a decent chance that, it's going to be the Vikings over the Jets.
Well, I hope
and if
so.
That's going to be the case, they may have to go back and bring back a Josh McCown or somebody like that.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm hoping happens, John. I really don't want to see them end up with Cousins. We've talked about this. And, again, yeah. I still have visions of Neil O'Donnell dancing in my head. But the other thing is, you know, how do the Lions like their salary cap situation with that big Stafford contract? Or, more importantly, how hamstrung have the Ravens been these past few years after they signed Flacco to that big contract? You know, unless the salary cap numbers explode, you're just paying these guys, one guy, too much money. And especially in the nature of football with those injuries, it's worse than baseball. You just can't pay them more than 20% of your cap.
Yeah, but again, it's not a matter of paying 20% of the cap. I mean, if it's around 15%, you know, that's almost been a historic type of number, 15% of the cap.
Yeah.
I mean, let's put it this way. It's better to pay 15% of your cap to a quarterback that's good as opposed to have, you know, 4% of your cap on quarterback and you have no quarterback. I mean, how have you enjoyed the last couple of years without a quarterback?
Last couple? How about the last 40?
Yeah, well, I mean... Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. I mean,
all right. No, but John, I'd much rather see them go the McNown route and draft somebody, move up, get somebody that you want, start with a young kid and try to make him your franchise quarterback, because you can build around him. Like I said, this team is not ready to contend. You know, the Broncos may very well be. The Vikings certainly are. You know, but the Jets are not. They have so many more pieces they need to fill. And, they don't need that quick fix like a 30-year-old quarterback. Bring in the kid, let him grow with the team. It gives you a 5-year window. You know, keeps your salary cap, you know, in control. You can buy and build around him. You know, look at what happened in Seattle here. I just think it's just it's a smarter way to go. Yes, it's more risky, but I don't think, you know, Cousins is the proven commodity that that some people are making him out to be.
Well, I mean, here's a 500 type of team. In fact, it was funny, and of course, I mean, to your point, I was talking to somebody, and you know what his record is against teams with winning records?
Worse than McNown's.
4-19.
Yeah, I saw that.
4-19 against teams. Yeah, and so, that's got to be a little bit scary because, again, it's like, hey, you know, you're going to not – I mean, again, it's like the old Dick Vermeil model. It's like, hey, I mean, you can be a Super Bowl team if you go 500 against against teams with winning records. But, you know, it's better to play 6 than it is 10. So it's like, yep, if you go 3-3 against teams with winning records, you're fine. But if you have to play 10, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, that's why I don't mind giving a quarterback money, but – man, not one you got to gamble on, and I just am not ready to pay Cousins that much money. So it's a concern to me. One thing to kind of digress for a moment, just talk hockey for a second, because, you know, yeah, I mean, growing up on the East Coast, we're both, you know, big hockey nuts, and I cannot echo your sentiments more than the difference between live hockey and TV hockey. And, you know, for people that have grown up watching the Thunderbirds, your minds are going to be blown, you know, if you have a chance to watch the NHL players live. Because, first off, just the level of skating is just far superior to what you see in the minor leagues. And I'll tell you, you know, there's not that many humans that can line up in one time a shot and put it where they want it to go. And the guys that can are in the NHL. The guys that can't are in the AHL and, you know, and lower. And, you know, I remember, you know, and you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, I remember we used to go up to the P&E all the time. And I never quite understood why Ray Bourque was considered such a great defenseman, because he wasn't fast, he wasn't big, didn't have a whole lot of skills. But I got a chance to go up to the P&E, and if you can watch a hockey game live, watch it from the goal areas. And then you can watch the whole rink and watch the plays develop. And, you know, the thing that, I mean, Ray Bourque just amazed me. Even without moving that much, he's moving without the puck. He is never out of position. Same thing with Gretzky, just that anticipation, watching him move before the puck is anywhere near him. And you just don't get that on TV. And that's where you just fully appreciate the genius of these guys. They're athletes like no other. And Hockey Live is just like no other.
Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, and it's the nuances you don't catch because, again, it's like, you know, I mean, what do you basically have in a hockey game? Two cameras? I mean, it's not like a Monday night football game or a Sunday night football game where you have 30, 40 cameras looking around. I mean, you just basically have a couple that are isolated, and you don't get to see all the things that go on. And that's what the beauty of hockey is when you see it live, because then you're able to watch, you know, because you're not, I mean, because, again, it may not be the greatest thing to watch, but watching how the guys come into the changes on the ice, as far as when they're, you know, coming in after, you know, a minute 40 shift, you know, they're jumping on the ice and all that stuff. Some guys make it fast, some guys do not, but you're able to judge. It's like, okay, because it's that that part of it never goes, because again, the camera's going to follow the puck, but you're not going to be able to see, because sometimes a guy's going to get caught up and not out there fast enough, and a team's going to be able to take advantage of it.
Absolutely. And like I said, watch it from the goal area. I mean, the cameras are perched right on the red line or on the blue lines. You don't want to watch it from the side. Mm-hmm. Watch it from the goal areas and watch the plays develop. It's just, again,
It's not a complicated game to pick up.
No, no, but I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, just the speed and the anticipation that's required is just fantastic. And these guys, the skill sets of the NHL players, oh, it's just unbelievable. It really it is. I'm just so happy for the opportunity. And anytime we can stick it to the NBA, hey, that's fine by me.
Absolutely. Hey, thank you so much for the call, Jet.
Safe travels.
Okay. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jeff in Tacoma. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, this is you do a good job on the show there. I've been listening to you for a long time. But my question has to do with the Seahawks. Now, if Blair Walsh would have made those couple field goals, they would have two or three more wins. And everybody's freaking out because they didn't make the playoffs, but they would have made the playoffs, and would they have changed, wouldn't they have not fired the coaches and stuff? And I just want your opinion on it, and I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you, John.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I mean, they were able to try to overcome several major problems, but not all of them. And that's why, you know, things eventually did catch up to them. You know, again, Russell Wilson's good enough to try to fix things in the fourth quarter to put the team into position to win in a couple of the games. A couple things went awry. They weren't able to do it. Three times in three home games, Blair Walsh missed five field goals that could have either tied or won the game. You know, that cost them three chances to win. I mean, they were close, but, you know, when you put in the slow starts on offense, the lack of the running game, the inconsistencies of the blocking that put Russell Wilson running around, and then some inconsistencies in the on the defense, I mean, that all added up. They're still good enough with their talent to be able to win those games. I think you make a good point in that. But all those things, when you have four things that are going wrong all at the same time, yet you're still close enough to win, that still gives you the hope that as long as you don't lose too much, you can bounce back the next year. I would anticipate that there's only one opening on the offensive line, whether it's internal or external. They've got to resolve that. You know, they've got to make sure they're deep enough at the wide receiver position. They're good enough at the tight end position without Jimmy Graham. I still think the biggest thing in the room right now is to figure out, okay, are they going to be too void on the pass rush? Because they've got to make sure that they replace, if it's Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril, they've got to do that. So, you know, but in the end, they're still a good team. There's still a team that's deep. You know, it's not going to be as deep as it was last year. They're going to have to do more with less, but they can try to do that. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Max in Marysville. Hey, Max.
Hey, John. I'm a Steelers fan out here in Washington. Anyhow, with all the stuff going on with Le'Veon Bell, franchise tag and him threatening retirement, Big Ben talking about retiring the last couple of years, Martavius Bryant being on the trade block, and I'm hearing stuff about Mike Tomlin might not be there next year. What's going on in Pittsburgh? What's the offense going to look like?
I mean, the offense is going to look, about the same, because it's going to be Ben Roethlisberger at quarterback, who said after the season that he wants to play three more years, different than he did last year. But you always have to know, if you're going to be a Steeler fan, you know, is always going to be drama with Ben Roethlisberger. That's just his nature. That's what he does. Secondly, if they can get a good deal for Bryant, they might consider it. And remember, this is probably one of the two best teams in football for finding wide receivers. I mean, look at Juju Schuster last year, how good he was, and nobody expected anything from him, and look how good he is. So, they have the luxury of trying to do this. The that Antonio Brown's the best wide receiver the last 3-4 years in football, and then Le'Veon Bell has no choice but play but the franchise tag. He's not going to get the number that he wants, and so I can't see him sitting out $14 million. They're still loaded. Offensive line all set. They still have some cap issues. Giving the franchise tag to Bell does make things difficult, but hey, they just have to try to get under the cap. They've done this for so many years. They just have to do it again. But overall, I mean, it's probably the most talented team in the AFC, but you have to give the edge to New England because they've got Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And as far as Tomlin, I mean, there's no way. I mean, he's got, I mean, look at, what is he, a 570 winning percentage. That's just some fans being frustrated and a couple minority owners being frustrated. But again, they're minority owners. They're not owned. I mean, the Rooneys run the show, and the Rooneys stay loyal.
All right. Thanks, John.
Pretty simple.
Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Don't forget, top of the hour, Mariner. Oh, well, no, we don't have baseball at the top of the hour. That's going to be a little bit different in that regard. Matt Johnson, who do we have on the line?
Jody.
Let's go to Jody in Federal Way. Hey, Jody.
Hi, John. I want to say I enjoy your show, and I especially enjoy your show Monday through Friday at 10. I never miss it. But anyway, my question is, when you're flying, how much are you recognized?
A lot.
A lot. Okay.
I mean, a lot.
The whole time when you're on the plane, or what?
They're pretty good on the plane. I mean, usually what ends up happening is that, I get a lot of pictures, selfies, can you sign this, which is, of course, I mean, for a newspaper guy who had as lucky as I've been through for my career, it's like, yeah, whatever you want. I mean, I don't know why you would want this, but, I'll give you an example. I was going by to try to go to the quarterback session this morning, and I had to sign 4 footballs, take 5 selfies, and I think that was just for about a 4-minute stretch.
Oh, wow. Well, anyway, you have a good trip back, and God bless.
Okay, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up those phone lines here, because go to the top of the hour. We'll be back on Monday for the show. And again, it's been a fun time here in Indianapolis. They have the quarterbacks now all completed all their work, so everything is now done for the day here as far as quarterbacks, tight ends, and wide receivers. Pretty impressed right now with Josh Rosen threw well. Certainly Josh Allen, he's a little bit lazy because he's so talented in his ability to throw, but he did very well. Also pleased to see that Shaquille Griffin's brother was able to put up 20 reps on the bench press today. That was pretty impressive. But overall, I mean, it's going to be an interesting draft. And again, how this affects the Seahawks, because again, if they do have 4 quarterbacks go in the top 10 or so, all of a sudden, now at 18, you have the option of getting the 15th best non-quarterback player in the draft, which I think is, or 13th best in the draft, and that's 14th best in the draft. That's pretty good. And so it gives you value. And of course, if you're trading down, and I can't imagine, they're not going to stay there for a running back. I mean, Geist from LSU looks like a little bit like a Marshawn Lynch, and he's going to be a temptation to maybe be able to consider. But, they need the volume because, again, without picks in the second and third round, we did confirm everything as far as, with yesterday, the Oakland Raiders did lose the coin toss. San Francisco got the 9th pick in the draft, and the Raiders got the 10th pick in the draft. And because of that, then all of a sudden leaked out all the different, the full draft order. And so Seattle gets a first-round pick, a fourth-round pick, 3 in the 5th round, none in the 6th round, and 3 in the 7th round. The Isaiah Battle trade, of course, he's on the roster because he spent most of the season on the practice squad, less on the roster. Kansas City didn't get a 7th round pick for him, so Seattle gets that pick back. They end up getting extra pick for Sheldon Richardson in the 7th round. They got their own 7th round pick. They got the extra pick for Cassius Marsh. Of course, they ended up not getting because they were able to get Justin Coleman. Then they get the extra pick for Trumaine Brock, a 7th round pick there, and in the Marshawn Lynch was a 5th round pick, so they came out of it okay. But again, what they have to do is maneuver around and try to get the extra picks in the second and third round, which is a void right now. The way it's looking, my evaluation is, if they lose Sheldon Richardson, who probably will get 14 to 16 a year, Jimmy Graham, if he gets about $9.5 million a year, if they have Paul Richardson getting $6 to $7 million a year, all these are my estimates, by the way, and there's about several guys getting probably 4, Luke Jokel, Bradley McDougal, who I think they'll be able to re-sign, a couple other guys getting 4 a year. That'll give them a third round compensatory next year, a third round or fourth round compensatory for Graham, a 5th rounder and a 6th rounder. And so that gives them some trade value to be able to move some of those picks. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
We got to welcome back a sunburned Matt Nelson, who was down in Mexico with his father, fishing for one day and then trying to recover from sunburn. And again, he produces and runs this show. Welcome back. Our thanks to Ashley Cox for filling in for the last 2 weeks while Matt was trying to recover from his sunburn and make sure that the sunglasses kind of covered for some of the white area that was remaining from the red. So welcome back, Matt. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up the phone lines. Let's go to Cindy in Lakewood. Hey, Cindy.
Hi, Professor. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm awake. I have a question for you.
Well, that's good.
I hope so. So with the combine looking good and the Seahawks have such late drafts, if they were to pick a running back in one of the later drafts, would they revert to the running back to a fullback position? Because it seemed like we had our best rushing games when we had a fullback with Will Tukuwafu and Mike Robb.
Yeah, I think they will. I think that's going to be something that Brian Schottenheimer is going to ask for and receive because, they weren't good in short yardage. Trey Madden, was more of an athlete than he was a fullback. He wasn't that traditional knock-em-down type of fullback. And, what they ended up trying to do, I thought they were going to bring back Marcel Reese. And I know he still would like to be back because we talked to him a couple weeks ago. But, they've got to do something at the fullback position, particularly if the emphasis is going to be come back and run the football. Remember, this is Brian Schottenheimer, whose father was Marty Schottenheimer in Marty Ball. So, no, I think that it's not they're going to be, it may only be 10 to 12 plays a game, but I do think that they will go to not a fullback-oriented offense, but more conventional stuff. Maybe a little more snaps from the center position as opposed to shotgun. I mean, they're still going to be a shotgun team because Russell Wilson's so good at that. But ultimately, I think they're going to try to be more basic. They're going to be more physical with the run blocking. That's going to be the Mike Solari style. That's what he likes to do. So they're going to ask, more pounded type of stuff. It's not man blocking. It's still zone blocking, but it's more forceful zone blocking. But, no, I think that you've hit on it. I mean, they'll have to have some kind of a fullback on the roster.
Okay, and then my last question is if they do lose Paul Richardson in free agency, obviously that makes Tyler Lockett a little bit more valuable. Would they pick somebody in the draft like Dante Pettis, where they would be looking for yet another punt returner?
Well, I mean, the problem is right now, no, because they don't have the third-round pick, and I've got a third-round grade on Dante Pettis. And by the way, Pettis had an ankle injury at the end of the season, and he didn't run here at the Combine because he's still kind of recovering from that. He felt he came back too soon. But, you know, that could be an option. But, again, they have to get the third-round pick to be able to do that because right now I think he's too valuable for waiting to the fourth round. But that can be an option. But remember, I mean, they have Amari Darbo. Darbo, I think that, you know, he'll have to step up if Richardson leaves. But, of course, if Richardson leaves, then I would have to think that they're going to escalate some kind of a negotiation to get something done with Tyler Lockett. Tyler at least has played enough that his base salary, you know, goes up from $705,000. He gets an escalator for playtime to $1,905 as far as his base salary. So, you know, they can try to see if they can work out something with Tyler Lockett. Hey, Cindy, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to William in Issaquah.
John, hey, thanks for taking my call. Listen, I've got a couple questions about the draft.
Yeah.
You know, the I think everybody sort of presumes the Seahawks will trade their first pick to get picks for the second and third. But
yeah.
Could they potentially trade some of those fits, move up, like package the 3 5s for a 2? Or...
No, that doesn't work. I mean, if you're trading second day draft choices or third day draft choices, you're only going to be able to move up one round. So it's like, okay, so if you give 2 5s, you might, depending on where the 5s are located, you might get into the lower part of the fourth round. But no, the way, and again, all you have to do is look at one of those Jimmy Johnson value charts, and that's what it'll tell you. I mean, once you start to get past the fourth round, if you throw in fifths, it's only going to get you maybe one round up, if that, or it's only going to get you up maybe 12 to 13 spots.
I see. You know, it's just funny because, I mean, they've been trading down every year predictably. And it makes sense when you're in the late 20s, but with a pick like 18, I'd love to see them get guys from LSU, like you mentioned a few minutes back.
Yeah, the running back from LSU is an intriguing back.
Yeah.
But again, they've got it. You know, they have more needs than just one running back.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, thank you, and all the best to you and Pat.
Okay, hey, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John, another great show. Any series
this
week?
I was sitting next to Jim Miller on watching the quarterbacks, and he's going to take off one day. He's not sure if it's going to be Monday or Friday, so it looks like I'll be filling in Monday or Friday, but he won't know that until he gets done with the show and drives back to Chicago tomorrow night. But Monday or Friday, it looks like. I told him Monday would be better, but you know, it's his day off, and but he's definitely taking a day off this week, so I will be on Sirius with Pat Kerwin this week on Moving the Chains.
Okay, I'll find it. Hey, quick question, John. Say Denver doesn't land Kirk Cousins, and then they get a second-tier or third-tier quarterback like A.J. McCarron. Does Denver cater their offense towards A.J. McCarron, or if they draft a quarterback, or are they going to give Paxton Lynch and A.J. McCarron whoever wins the battle? Because I don't
see A.J. being any better than
maybe the potential that Paxton might have. I don't think A.J.'s just spinning his wheels. Denver.
Yeah, I think that they've mentally moved on from Paxton. I don't think they've seen enough of a work ethic, enough progress, or any of that stuff. And so I think that they're ready. You know, they're just ready to do something different. So Paxton, I think, is part of the past. He'll maybe on the roster, but he's really more part of the past than anything else. I would have to think that what you wonder. I mean, because I know it's going to be tough for the Eagles to trade Nick Foles. I mean, how do you feel about Nick Foles?
Well, I like him. I don't want to see Denver give up. I mean, he was obviously productive over the playoff run in the Super Bowl, even last year when he started. But I don't want to see Denver give up, a first or a second.
I'll tell you, because you got to realize the Eagles are in the same boat as the Seahawks. And so as much as they now have to protect themselves at quarterback, waiting for Carson Wentz to come back, they also don't have a second and third round pick, and they're over the cap. And so they're going to have to let some players go. So, I think a second round pick right now may tempt them if you think a second round pick would be worth it.
I wouldn't mind Denver giving up a second-round pick, but I don't know if the number five or the second. If they had a later one, then that'd be better.
No, I mean, I would agree with that. I think if they can get a later second-round pick, that might be the answer.
Okay, then one quick one, John. Say they do get McCarron or whoever, Bridgewater or Keenum, and then they draft a quarterback at 5,
yeah.
If they do, would the quarterback at five be the starting quarterback? Are they going to try giving him every opportunity to play, or is it?
There's enough flaws in these quarterbacks because I think it's going to be Darnold 1, Rosen 2. So now you're talking Allen or Mayfield. Unless you think Mayfield's going to be the most ready of those four quarterbacks, that quarterback's going to have to sit. I mean, because, again, not enough snaps behind center, not enough snaps. And, you know, Allen is very inaccurate right now.
Yeah, I don't want anything to do with Allen.
No, because throwing to his left is a problem. Real strong arm. He's really gifted as far as that arm. But I know Jim Miller and I both agree when we were watching him today that it's like throwing to his left is a big issue. So it's like you stack that left side of the field. Remember, Rick Meyer had that problem when he was in, particularly in his second and third year. I mean, throwing to his left, he struggles in that regard.
Yeah, we've had too many quarterbacks that are inaccurate. That's where a lot of those turnovers come from, overthrown pass or cutting it short, not in the right spot. So I definitely don't want to see Allen. Hey, John, you have a great weekend. Yeah. Enjoy yourself and your wife.
All right, Victor. Hey, thank you very much. And again, thank you very much. Looking forward to flying back. Looks like it's all set. And, of course, the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.